This week on Vaticano, discover the liturgical richness of Advent in the Eternal City as we prepare for the Jubilee of Hope. Join an exclusive interview with Father Hans Zollner, a leading expert on safeguarding at the Pontifical Gregorian University, and step inside Rome's most renowned ecclesiastical tailor shop. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. At the Aula Magna of Lumsa University in Rome, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, Secretary of State of His Holiness Pope Francis, presented Matthew Ford's latest book, The Pastoral Care of Solitude, A New Proposal. The book explores a pressing issue of our times, the epidemic of loneliness, which Cardinal Parolin described as a pervasive sign of the times and a symptom of the cultural crises of modern Western societies. Reflecting on the causes of this growing crisis, Cardinal Parolin highlighted the role of individualism and indifference in creating a culture that isolates and discards.
Our time is marked by individualism and indifference, which generate loneliness and lead to the discarding of many lives. This is our culture today. Individualism and indifference, which generate loneliness and provoke discarding. The culture of waste.
Ford, a Christian historian and scholar based in Rome, has dedicated much of his academic career to examining the process of secularization and its impact on European societies, particularly in Great Britain. His book delves into the cultural and spiritual void left by the retreat of Christian values and practices, which once formed the bedrock of community and belonging.
The author seeks to explain the causes of the pandemic of loneliness in the West, addressing a topic not commonly explored by secular sensibilities, namely, the consequences of the retreat, weakening, and in some cases, the extinction of Christian culture.
Echoing the concerns of Pope Francis, Cardinal Parolin underscored the urgency of addressing loneliness as a societal challenge, particularly among vulnerable populations such as the elderly.
Pope Francis noted, one of the most widespread illnesses I see today in Europe is the loneliness of those who lack bonds. This is particularly evident among the elderly, who are often abandoned to their fate.
Cardinal Parolin's presentation served not only as an endorsement of Ford's work, but also as a clarion call for renewed efforts to counter the culture of isolation and indifference. Global health experts convened at the Vatican to address a looming health emergency, antimicrobial resistance, or AMR. The symposium, hosted by the Global Coalition on Aging and the Acton Institute at the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, aimed to shine a light on the crisis and mobilize action.
This antimicrobial resistance, AMR, has become a huge crisis for the world. We are at the place where we are about to have a world without antibiotics, pre-1950s, if we don't do several things about it.
The event underscored the critical role antibiotics play in modern medicine. Without them, routine surgeries, cancer treatments, and organ transplants could become life-threatening.
Antibiotics are really one of the foundations of modern medicine. And if we lose antibiotics, much that we have in the medical scientific complex is under threat.
Hosting the event at the Vatican was seen as an ideal place to amplify the urgency of this issue, taking into consideration the Vatican's global moral influence. The conference concluded with a call to action, urging governments, faith communities, and the public to work together to prevent a return to the dark ages of medicine.
The church, of course, broadly constructed, has represented very important messages connecting ethics and morality to healthy societies.
Hodin also highlighted the economic and societal stakes, especially as the world faces unprecedented aging populations and declining birth rates. As the AMR crisis grows, global cooperation remains essential to safeguarding public health and the foundations of modern medicine.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. A teenager known as God's Influencer for his digital talents will be canonized as a saint in April 2025 during the Jubilee for Teenagers in Rome. Carlo Acutis, who passed away from leukemia in 2006 at just 15 years old, will become the first millennial saint representing those born between the early 1980s and late 1990s. In May, Pope Francis approved a second miracle attributed to Carlo, paving the way for his sainthood. Often called the patron saint of the internet, Carlo is celebrating for cataloging miracles online and managing websites for Catholic organizations. At a Vatican event marking the 40th anniversary of the Treaty of Peace and Friendship between Argentina and Chile, Pope Francis condemned the hypocrisy of nations that speak of peace while profiting from the arms trade, calling it a pharisaical attitude that inevitably undermines fraternity and peace. He pointed to the conflicts in Ukraine and Palestine as tragic examples of humanity's failure where arrogance prevails over dialogue. On the Solemnity of Christ the King, as the Church celebrated World Youth Day, Pope Francis presided over the handover of the World Youth Day cross on the icon of Mary Salus Populi Romani. During Mass in St. Peter's Basilica, young people from Portugal passed the symbols to a South Korean delegation preparing to host World Youth Day in Seoul in 2027. In his homily, the Pope described these symbols as a call for Christians to live the gospel with hope and perseverance. Pope Francis met with the academic community of John Paul II Pontifical Theological Institute for Marriage and Family. Urging continued collaboration with scholars and cultural institutions to support Catholic spouses and families, he emphasized the importance of developing a critical understanding of the anthropological and cultural challenges facing marriage and family life today. On December the 15th, Pope Francis will make a historic one-day visit to Corsica, France. This will be his 47th apostolic journey abroad and his third visit to French territory, following trips to Strasbourg in 2014 and Marseille in 2023. Again, he will visit the periphery instead of the nation's capital. He'll be present during the final day of a church conference on popular piety, a topic very close to the pontiff's heart. Thank you so much for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andreas Tonhauser in Rome for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with a special look at Advent in the Eternal City.
Advent is a continuous call to hope. It reminds us that God is present in history to lead it to its ultimate goal, to lead it to its fullness, which is the Lord Jesus Christ.
As the Vatican prepares to celebrate the birth of Christ by setting up the Christmas tree and building the nativity scene, the Eternal City comes alive with unique traditions that hold special significance this year. With last-minute preparations underway for the Holy Year, the Jubilee of Hope, these customs not only mark the close of the liturgical year and the beginning of a new one, but also deepen the sense of anticipation and reflection among the faithful.
This year's theme of hope is perfectly linked to the liturgical time of Advent, because in Advent, as we have mentioned, we await the second coming of Jesus. We await him as Savior.
Advent, Latin for coming, marks the start of the Church's liturgical year and spans the four Sundays and weekdays before Christmas. derived from advenire, to come forward, and adventus, arrival. Advent is the season of Christ's arrival in our hearts, the world, and God's plan for salvation. Advent also marks the start of the new liturgical year.
Advent during this period is particularly important because it closes the liturgical year, and thus a new liturgical year begins. And every time we go to celebrate the Eucharist, we realize that the Gospels are almost overlapping. The last weeks of ordinary time almost coincide with the first weeks of Advent.
From the early church, believers have been captivated by Jesus' promise to return. Like Lent, Advent uses purple as its liturgical color to signify preparation for major feasts. During Advent Masses, priests wear violet or purple vestments, except on Gaudete Sunday, the third Sunday of Advent, when rose is permitted, signifying that Christmas, the arrival of Christ, is near.
Then, progressively, in Rome, this penitential character and great fasting gradually softened and decreased. Instead, especially here in Rome, it gives way to a great surge of hope, expectation, and joy. In other words, combining the two realities of Christ's coming, the first coming in the flesh that we contemplate as Christmas, which we must prepare for, but also another coming that we, as the faithful, and indeed all of history and humanity, are moving toward, which is the final coming of the Lord.
This year, the Christmas period in Rome is even more special due to the start of the Jubilee of Hope, that the Pope will celebrate Mass at St. Peter's Square instead of St. Peter's Basilica. Also, the Advent retreat will be held by Father Roberto Pasolini, the new preacher of the papal household, who succeeded the 90-year-old Cardinal Raniero Cantalamessa, who served for 44 years. As we prepare for Christmas and the Holy Year, with activities like decorating trees, putting out nativity scenes, and exchanging gifts, these actions hold a deeper spiritual meaning.
Certainly, a particular tradition that is renewed every year is the famous and characteristic nativity scene in the square, displayed from the 8th of December throughout the Christmas period. This is eagerly awaited by all the faithful who wish to discover its characteristics and style. But beyond curiosity, I believe it is an excellent tool, because very often, behind a nativity scene in the Vatican, there is much reflection. Various people are invited to participate, and thus, each nativity scene tells the story of Christ, but also the story of those who built it, the story of God and the story of humanity together.
This year's nativity scene will come from Grado, a historic lagoon town rich in traditions, located in the province of Gorizia. A majestic 29-meter-tall red fir tree from Ledro, in the province of Trento, will stand beside the nativity display.
I believe this is also a way to answer the previous question. Where do we find hope? We see it there, in the nativity scene. We see it, small, seemingly fragile, but certain. It has happened, it exists, and we remember it.
As Advent culminates in the joyous celebration of Christmas, we're reminded of its profound purpose, preparing our hearts for the coming of Christ, both in his birth and his eventual return. On Christmas Day, the opening of the Holy Door will usher in the Jubilee of Hope, the Holy Year, a time of grace, renewal, and reflection. Father Hans Zollner, director of the Institute of Anthropology at the Pontifical Gregorian University and one of the Catholic Church's leading experts on safeguarding and abuse prevention, is known for his unwavering commitment to protecting minors. In an interview with EWTN Vatican Bureau's Rome correspondent, Paola Ariazza, Father Zollner discusses measures to safeguard minors in countries plagued by poverty and violence.
Thank you so much, Father Hans Zollner, for allowing us to make this interview. Could you let us know a little bit about your job in regards to the protection of minors?
Education, formation. in safeguarding, which goes beyond simply giving guidelines or giving workshops. We want to create an atmosphere where people can feel safe and are safe, in safe space, safe relationships, and safe processes.
You just came back from your trip from Colombia and Mexico. What was the purpose of this trip?
I would say there is a lot more to do, but at least the Catholic Church can say that they are engaged in this in basically every country. What is not going well, not only in Latin America, but also in other parts of the world, is how the Catholic Church, its institutions, and its responsible persons face what has happened in the past in terms of what type of abuse has happened, who did commit that abuse, who covered it up, and what is being done to reach out to victims' families. That is very difficult for the Catholic Church worldwide to admit to those crimes, to reach out to and listen to the victims, and to do whatever can be done so that justice is being brought about.
Part of that could be education as well. You mentioned that in the Institute you have this culture of education as something important to prevent abuse. Is there anything that could be done?
A lot can be done, and a lot has been indicated by the Church itself. In 1992, John Paul II issued a document, Pastores Dabo Bobis, which indicates that human formation is the cornerstone of all other types of priestly formation, pastoral, intellectual, and spiritual. In 2016, the Dicastery for Clergy issued a guideline for priestly formation, initial formation and ongoing formation, in which they say you need to make sure that people who carry a risk of becoming perpetrators should be screened out, so which means selection process. I can say confidently that in many places that what the Church urges and obliges to do is not implemented.
We have spoken about many factors that promote these cases of abuse or that make it easier for it to happen. We've spoken about violence, poverty, maybe in Latin America, that's a big issue. Do you think that's a reality?
Safeguarding work of the Church cannot live only in a bubble where we say in our parish people feel safe and are safe, but when they go on the calle normal, no, and in los barrios pobres, then the people are threatened with death and all types of violence. If you feel and if you see something is going wrong, and if you have an awkward feeling, believe yourself and do something. Reach out to people you trust and you know who know more than you about how to deal with such situations. And therefore, it is important that within the diocese and the religious communities, we have persons who are trained well enough and can counsel and advise what is to do and to whom to direct, for example, allegations or, let me say, perceptions, so that abuse that is going on or abuse that is about to happen is stopped immediately.
I think this mission must be really close to the heart for you too. Why did you select to carry on this mission?
Victims have reached out to me, many from different parts of the world, of different types of abuse in different settings, church and not church. And many, not all, but many have encouraged me to continue, even if they realize that it is taking a toll on me, on my community, on our institute here, that we have continuously to face also the resistances within the system church, within the organization at different levels, and change is very slow, far too slow in many parts of the world. There is no way other than to engage in what I believe and I reflect upon as what is the core of the mission of the Church. Everything else follows.
Padre Hans Holler, muchísimas gracias.
Gracias a usted.
We'll be back after a short break with a visit to Rome's most famous tailor shop for the ecclesiastical world. As the 10th Cardinal Creating Consistory of Pope Francis approaches on December the 7th, the storefront of the most famous tailor shop for the ecclesiastical world in Rome becomes red. The location looks like a holdover from another era. Hidden away in Piazza di Santa Chiara, just a few steps behind the Pantheon. The name, Ditta Annibale Gamarelli, is well known to clergy throughout Italy and the world. In 2000, the shop was included in the list of Rome's historical shops and is probably the oldest Roman craft enterprise, still run by direct descendants of the founder. The sixth generation of the Gamarelli family now holds the reins of the family business and is very proud of it. Alessia Gamarelli is the sixth generation owner and the first woman to head the family company along with two cousins, Massimiliano and Lorenzo. And it was she who designed the storefront this way for the upcoming Vatican celebrations.
It's a bit of a historical window display because not all of these items are still used today. Obviously, the black cassock and the cope, yes, the sash, yes, the cross as well, but this entire set of vestments and the mantle are not really used anymore.
And fabrics are a bit old, you said.
Yes, we only use this vestment for the window display, with vestments for cardinals, so it's a little bit old.
Several items down here, including shoes, by the way, I was wondering if they are still used.
Very rarely. This color is used very rarely. The sashes, yes, the socks, yes, and the beretta, perhaps because it is only worn on the day of the appointment. Then in this window display, we also have the Holy Father's Zucchetto, which we always keep in all our window displays as a distinguishing staple piece.
Established in 1798 by the patriarch of the family, Giovanni Antonio Gamarelli, the tailor shop was founded during the pontificate of Pius VI and promptly began serving the Roman clergy. The family has provided exclusive service to the last eight popes, starting with Pius XI. And now has the honor to prepare vestments for Pope Francis.
This Pope is very simple in the way of being, in the way even of dressing, but still, he also uses your tailoring for his white clothes that he wears daily?
Yes, yes, always.
But do you go there to take measurements?
They place an order, give us the measurements, and we make the clothes.
How long does it take to prepare such a robe?
It takes about a week to prepare a vestment.
Do you need a particular fabric, the one for Pope?
Colors are obviously special, and about the fabrics, they are all of very good quality, all pure wool and so on. So obviously, the vestments for the Pope are made with great care, although the other ones are made equally well.
It is his headgear. Do you also do it then?
Yes, and there are often people who come wanting to buy a zucchetto to give to the Holy Father. I don't know if you know about this. So they buy it from us, we put it in a nice little box, and then they give it to the Pope, hoping to exchange it for his.
The special privilege of the historic Taylor family concerns the election of a new Pope. During each conclave, the Gamarellis are charged with making three white cassocks in different sizes, small, medium, and large, which sit ready and waiting for the new successor of Peter. Inside the shop that seems like a real treasury of past centuries, throughout the two small rooms, portraits of past pontiffs hang or are propped on tables and cabinets. Along the walls, floor-to-ceiling shelves house bolts of fabric, cottons and silks in rich reds and purples, and ornate brocades shot through with metallic threads, almost all still produced in Italy.
We have a lot of fabrics here, almost all pure silk, and they all come from Italian fabrics. Some of them come from Spain, but 90% of them are Italian and we use them to make sacred vestments. Here is my cousin with my brother who is not here at the moment making them. From vestments to shoes, hats, and accessories, all the garments are handmade with the same scrupulous attention to detail. Over time, the garments have enclosed thousands of priests as well as bishops and cardinals of the church.
Silver, as I can see. Others are gold in color, however.
There's nothing in gold silver here, only silver, gold-plated silver.
On average, 10 outfits are produced every week, and just 15 people work in the Gamarelli company, all of them exclusively artisans.
È una ditta ancora artigianale.
It is still a small artisanal company. We make all of these garments right here in our workshop, including all the sacred vestments, which we cut and sew ourselves. We strive to carry on this beautiful tradition. It's not easy, but we do our best to keep it alive.
Cerchiamo di farlo.
Why is it not easy, you say? Because there is a lot of competition.
It's especially challenging to find good tailors and talented craftsmen.
Now the Gamarelli family, who have had the honor of serving every pope of the past century, look forward to passing on the baton to the next generation, ensuring that their legacy continues and shapes history for years to come.